Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to the Sans Pants Network,
home of comedy,
culture,
adventures,
and ghosts.
Hello, and welcome to Scaredy Boys, a podcast where three cowardly friends discuss horror movies. I'm Damien.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Tom.
And for this episode, we watched A Haunting in Venice. A Haunting in Venice is a 2023 American supernatural mystery film produced and directed by Kenneth Branagh, who reprises his role from the previous films in the series, with a screenplay by Michael Green and based on the 1969 novel Halloween Party by Agatha Christie. In post-World War II Venice, Perrault, now retired and living in his own exile, reluctantly attends a séance. But when one of the guests is murdered, it's up to the former detective to once again uncover the killer.
Kenny B.
The Brand Boy. All
Special
Brand.
K. All Brand. The Kenneth.
Ken.
The capital. He's Kenneth enough.
Do you think anyone calls him Kenny? Do you think he ever cops Kenny?
I reckon he would, yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's Sir Kenneth.
Yes, but I reckon he would cop Kenny from certain people.
Okay, I hope
and
he
I'm
does.
Trying to think of does. Who calls him Kenny, and the only person that comes to mind who would do it and get away with it is James Cameron, but I don't know if they're friends.
What about old mate Jamie?
Jamie
Dorn. Is it Dornan?
Oh, no, Jamie Dornan.
Do you reckon he calls him Kenny?
He's a Brit. He'd call him Kenneth.
He's Irish, yeah.
He's
yeah.
Irish,
so's Kenneth.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I reckon, yeah, they're just a couple of lads. I reckon it's Kenny.
Yeah, I'll go Kenny.
Kenny and the J-Dog.
Kenny and J-Dog.
Yeah.
It's tearing up Belfast.
I think Tina Fey tried it on for size and it didn't land.
It definitely didn't work for her.
So oh, Tina Fey. Much to discuss there. Would you like to know a little bit about part two of this franchise?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to, because we've seen Orient Express, all of us.
I quite like it, but I like a movie on a train, I will admit that. Not that big on a movie on a boat, which is what the second one is. I can't even remember what the second one's called. Tom, do you remember what it's called?
The Nile.
Death on the Nile. Death on the Nile, that's right.
Enough champagne
to fill the Nile. A movie that famously had about four or five, maybe six different release dates.
Yeah, sake stuff.
I was telling you guys before that at one point the Twitter account for the second film had cover photo, a profile picture, and a pinned tweet, and they all had a different release date in the
that's
image.
So crazy.
It's just ridiculous stuff. Had a cursed cast, had Armie Hammer, Letitia Wright when she was like getting a lot of negative press.
Russell Brand.
And Gal Gadot, fresh off like underwhelming everybody with the second Wonder Woman movie.
And also being a bad actor. And also being a bad actor.
And also doing the Believe song during
Imagine.
COVID. Imagine.
That's
song
right.
During COVID.
Yeah.
Who was... We've talked about this before with Chris O'Dowd.
Chris O'Dowd. Louis Theroux has a podcast. There's an episode with Chris O'Dowd. It is a joy to listen to. They're genuinely just good mates. They're like constantly ribbing each other the whole episode. And Louis, halfway through... chucks in the Believe thing, which Chris O'Dowd is in. And Chris O'Dowd is like, yeah, look, Kristen, as in Kristen Wiig, who was obviously in Wonder Woman 84, as well as the one with him.
Yeah, Bridesmaids.
Bridesmaids. He's like, you know, she sent me a message. I didn't even really know what it was. Did it. Forgot about it. And then the next day, his wife is like, hey, Chris, have you seen this? She's like, oh, geez, glad it's not me. And she's like, nah, it is you. And it's so funny because basically, like, I can't remember how he describes it, but it's very funny because he's a funny dude. But basically, completely owns that it's like a sack of shit. He's like,
good on him.
Yeah, we should have just shut up. This was not the time for us to be saying anything.
I think Pedro Pascal has also been asked about it, and he was just like,
He just wants to make anyone happy.
Yeah, he does.
Good on him.
He's a good boy.
Yeah, so the second one, Death on the Nile, it sucks. It's really shit.
Yeah. So I was keen, because I love a murder mystery, like big fan of that. I don't mind writing one as well. Your review of Death on the Nile literally made me go, skipping it. I'm not going to watch
Can't even remember. I probably gave it half a star, maybe one and a half.
It was obviously brutal enough. And I'm like, fuck, this has affected Sean.
It was one of those ones that I watched, and I think I was annoyed at it mainly because I thought the script sucked, because I guessed the murderer almost straight away. And I'm like, it's not what I'm here for. I want to go through the motions of this investigation and be proven wrong and then find out it's someone else.
Yeah.
And, nah, just guessed it easily and very annoying. And just, bad acting. And one of those movies where it's like, some of it is practical, but the majority of it is location. And some of the effects were horrendous.
Wow.
And like, talking like you go from one shot that looks nice to one that looks disgusting and then back to a nice one.
Yeah.
And it was too much. It was a crap film. That's
interesting because I was reading just earlier that this one is very much mostly practical.
Yes.
So a lot of the sets are in Venice.
You can tell.
Yeah, you can tell.
Yeah. It is exquisitely shot.
It's actually looks fuck. It made me like, yes, I want to go to Venice.
I had about half of the movie, I was like, that could be me.
Yeah.
I could be on a little boat.
Yes.
I could be a little boy on a little boat, having a little bit of cheese, having a little bit of wine, having a little bit of an adventure.
There is an authenticity to this one that the second one is completely lacking. And people would have heard of the second one perhaps for the fact that the mustache has its own origin story at the start.
He gets a war injury, right?
So there's a war injury and he feels responsible for his commanding officer being killed. Right. His commanding officer has a mustache. And then he is in his hospital bed recovering. And I believe Catherine is the woman that he was in love with who has since passed.
Yeah, okay.
That's this wound that he's carried for his whole life now. She comes to see him and he's thinking, I'm a hideous beast, don't look at me. And she's just like still in love with him, obviously. And is like, you'll just have to grow a mustache. And then it cuts to years later, he's got the worst mustache in the world. But that movie ends. So the whole thing is like him sort of rejecting the call.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to do it anymore. He needs a break. He's exhausted emotionally and all this, which is a bit of a theme in these movies. He doesn't ever really want to do the crime solving. It also seems
to be a theme that's come too soon.
It's kind of like how Daniel Craig did Casino Royale, which was fantastic. And Quantum of Solace. And then we have Skyfall, his third entry in the Bond movies. And he's past his prime. He's old.
Yeah,
he's
to retire. Bond,
it's like, whoa, that's come a bit.
Yeah.
Because Casino Royale is his first Bond. The film opens with him getting the 00 status.
Yeah. He's married and all this sort of stuff.
And Quantum of Solace takes place like directly on the heels of Casino Royale. Yeah. Baffling stuff.
Yeah.
It does feel like that.
Yeah.
But this movie, the second one, is sort of all about him accepting that he needs to let go of that part of him, of the detective. And he does. Like it ends with him shaving the mustache because that's the mask that he's been like using to shield himself from the world. And it's him attending like a performance by a singer who's a character that he meets in the film. And it's like, the camera pans around and it's got his scar and he's just embracing who he is. And you think that's a nice ending to what is a bumpy two-film franchise.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when I heard they're doing a third one, I was like, what? Why?
This makes me think you should have saved that for like, they're clearly going to do a ton of these, like the 10th one, when you're actually wrapping it up.
Yeah.
Like, not the second one.
I think the thing is with these movies.
Oh, sorry, Tom, to cut you off. But the scene where he ends is at like a music club or whatever. Mm. We've seen that earlier in the film.
Is that a rave?
Yeah. No, we've seen that
he's
earlier.
He's an underground rave from Matrix Reloaded. He's getting his neck hole fingered.
Covered in fluoro.
Yeah.
He's dropped some ease. Come on, let's be honest.
The Prodigy and Rage Against the Machine are blasting out of the speakers.
So we've seen the club that he's at, and at the start of the movie, he's famous. Everyone, Mr. Poirot, have this seat, have this table, VIP.
Yeah.
When he comes at the end, nobody fucking recognizes him. He's completely anonymous. And then you sit down and you see, no mustache. He's lost. He's been stripped of his identity, essentially. Wow. But it felt like a cap on the character.
Yeah,
it was like, all right, he's done now. Yeah.
When is Death of the Nile set? What year?
Oh, I don't know.
Because this is 47. So I'd love to know. You know what? I'm on it.
All right. You do that.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about this. Obviously, this is a murder mystery story. This is an Agatha Christie story. And we're doing it on Scaredy Boys.
Yep.
So obviously, when the trailer dropped for this one and it was like horror, we are playing with the horror vibes now. This is Poirot having some horror. I was very excited. And then when I think, Sean, you suggested we do it for Scary Wars, and I was even more excited because we have definitely have a, we all have a love for horror now. We may not have started with one, but we've undeniably grown one throughout the course of this podcast.
Too much so, I would say.
Yeah, dangerously so.
You recently said to us, hey, boys, I'm looking for like a short story collection. Can you recommend it for everything? And I gave you about five or six ones, and then you went, you realize they're all horror. Like, what's going on?
I never mentioned horror short stories. Tom gave me some that were just like a mixed bag from different writers. Like, I think there's some magical realism, some sci-fi stuff.
Yeah.
Sean, a wall of horror suggestions.
Yeah.
But either way, so for the idea of us getting to talk about another genre in connection with horror, I still think, yeah, now being able to sort of expand and talk about the way they use horror for another genre, I think is really exciting. So as well as even just talking about other genres is really exciting. It's been so fun breaking down horror. The idea of breaking down other genres is equally as exciting. So yeah, really keen to talk about this one. So I kind of want to hit the horror stuff now if we can, because I think it is, it's interesting to see how they play with a lot of the visuals, some of the tropes. You know, we do have some jump scares in here. We do have the aesthetic is definitely
horror camera angles.
Horror camera angles, all that sort of stuff. And so it's interesting to see it playing in that ballpark. So without going into the were we scared of it all, we'll save that for a bit later. How, what was your guys' feeling on them playing in that ballpark?
I had fun. Yeah, I mean, I had fun, but I think I wanted, like, we looked at each other, Tom. We wanted fun coming into it.
Mm. Oh, I knew what I was getting in for. Yeah. And I will say this, Kenny B,
yep,
just like Kenny G,
yeah,
delivered exactly what was promised.
Yeah.
It wasn't saxophone. It was it was a movie about a silly little guy,
yeah,
who's very serious and very depressed, but has loves solving mysteries.
Yeah. He loves eggs.
The only person who loves these movies, Kenneth Branagh is going to keep making these until he dies.
Yeah.
He loves doing it. This is his James Bond.
Yeah,
he gets to have fun. He gets to go on. Watching this, I was very much reminded of, you know how like Adam Sandler has that deal with Netflix where he just makes a bunch of movies?
Yeah, yeah.
And all of them he's just like, yeah, this one's in Tahiti. Yeah, this one's set in Thailand.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one's in Hawaii in a 5-star resort.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, this one's on a European getaway. Like, this is what Kenneth Branagh feels like he's doing with these movies. He's like, yeah, this one's on a train. Yeah, this one, we're going on a boat. This one is in the beautiful Venice.
And do you know that the original story was set just in the UK? So the Halloween party that this is based off of, not in Venice, nothing to do with Venice.
Good on you, Kenny. Brenner
chucked it in Venice.
I love it. And shot in Venice, like went full balls to all Venice.
And fuck, it makes it a better movie for it.
Yeah.
Some of my favorite shots were just the way they were shooting Venice. Like they really did a fantastic
job. But also, it by putting it in Venice, he creates a barrier. You were on a house. There is now a storm.
Yes.
You cannot leave.
Yeah.
The storm was a good touch.
And it's just like you are now trapped here with either a ghost or worse, a murderer.
Right.
Or worse, a ghost murderer. Bad stuff.
Some directors have that one for me, one for the studio sort of thing. And it's funny because he did Belfast, which is like the personal thing of his childhood and his family.
Oscar nominated.
Oscar nominated. It feels like he did it so that he can continue to make these movies. don't you think though? Like, he's like, I've got a bank one that's critically acclaimed, wins Oscars, gets all the buzz so that I can go and make my silly little mustache.
So I can put my little mustache and terrible goatee back on.
Well, speaking of the mustache, I did look. So Death on the Nile is supposedly set in 37.
Okay.
So late 30s. So it's 10 years between Death on the Nile and this. So it makes sense that he might then come out of retirement and then go back into retirement again.
So has he been retired for 10 years?
And he's grown the mustache back.
He's obviously popped the mustache back on. Yeah.
It feels like a sad retirement though.
Yes. Which like, again, I like that element. Obviously like for these sorts of characters, I think we've talked about this before in terms of our character arcs. So we can have a positive character arc, which is most movies, a negative character arc where a character basically ends up worse than they started, which is, you know, anything from the 70s, really, once we started having anti-heroes. Yes. And then we have our neutral or flat arc character arcs.
Yep.
And definitely a character like this is almost always flat arc. It's everyone else who's learned stuff. They're the ones who already know the answer, which he does as well. It's not supernatural. It's going to be real. I'm just going to figure it out. And then they have moments of doubt throughout that arc, but they end up pretty much back where they started.
Yeah.
So I think giving him an arc of like, well, can we get him still pretty flat arc, but technically I would say this is a positive change arc, where he ends up, in a pretty sad, pretty lonely, self-imposed exile of retirement, and then finishes reinvigorated, ready to be a detective again.
Yeah.
I think that's a nice touch to a character that's like, it's hard to give arcs to these sorts of characters.
It's nice. And it's not, to be honest, it's a kind of arc you don't often see anymore with movies. So there is an old-fashioned sort of charm to it.
Yeah.
But back to the comment on the horror, what he brings to the horror.
Yeah.
I think largely unsuccessful. largely it comes across as someone who is just sort of hitting the broad strokes of what he thinks a horror needs to have in it without effectively pulling the things off properly.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there because it's like, you don't have a love of horror. No. This isn't you. This isn't your homage to horror. Oh, I get to play with this character that I love and a genre that I love. Oh, that's really fun. It's like, oh,
the genre he loves is mystery.
Yeah, which like, okay, and that's fun. But like, if you're going to bring in the horror vibes, I don't know. I kind of wanted it to go a bit harder down. Like it plays in it. I just don't think it does it.
There's no innovation whatsoever in the horror aspects of it.
Yes, that's what it is. Yeah.
Regardless of what he does with the character or with the mystery elements, which again, there's probably no innovation either. To be honest, watching this, I thought, man, it's one thing to watch this franchise, you know, the movies come out every 4 years or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I can't really imagine, no disrespect to Agatha Christie, I can't really imagine reading one of those books one after the other, after the other, after the other. Man, I'd get sick of the tropes.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. So Holly and I were talking about this as we all watched it together, but yes, Holly and I drove home to where we are now. Hey, we're all in Damon's house. This is Scaredy Studios. And yeah, we're talking about sort of the murderer. And of course, if you're listening to this podcast, we do spoilers. We always do spoilers.
But also, just a heads up, the book was published in like 1938. Yeah,
there's that too. Yeah. So 100%, I'm going to about to say who the murderer is. So if you don't want to find out, stop, come back. Listen then.
It's Poirot.
Oh, my God.
Whoa, Kenny. Oh, I've lost his last name.
It's the brand boy.
The brand man.
Full of brand.
The mustache drove him crazy.
All brand, just taking so many shits.
So the mum did it. And Holly basically said, for her, she kind of expected that from me. It's like the girl's definitely being poisoned to some degree. Yeah. You know, there's a limited people who could do that. And Holly predicted the mum. And I was saying...
How early?
Pretty early from what I can tell.
Same. And also, I'm giving myself two ticks.
Yep.
I went mum and I went Tina Fey.
Oh, good one.
Yeah, I didn't trust Tina Fey from the outset.
One bit. And to be honest, it was from when she says, I'm an old friend, and he says, I have no friends.
Yeah,
I was immediately my mind was like, she's not. And as soon as she said that she had 30 books, 27 bestsellers. They've hated the last three. I'm like, desperation here. She's cooking something.
Yeah, and that's why she's going out to her friend Poirot, who's the most famous man in the world.
Yeah. But I think, again, for this, it's a pretty broad sort of mystery. I think for some watchers, if they're not as looking out for it, it's like more, it's satisfying to them. I think as soon as you're on the hunt for it,
but I am going to find,
of course, I agree.
Enough mystery stuff that I'm watching Only Murders in the Building at the moment.
Right.
Like every episode, I'm like ticking things off. I'm like, I'm going to crack this fucking case
that's,
wide open.
That's the beauty of
why this one. I think casting is crucial too, because I'm watching it and I reach a certain point where I'm like, they've got, I think it's Kelly O'Reilly playing the mum.
Yeah.
She's a great actress.
Yeah.
She's quite a notable actress.
Right.
She's doing nothing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
She is up to this in her eyeballs.
The minute I worked it out was, it was based on, I was watching something else recently, and it was like the way you could work out who did it is that when they it was The After Party. Watching The After Party, both season one and season two, there's like season one in particular.
Don't spoil season two, I haven't seen it.
No. So season one in particular, there's this whole bit where it ends up, spoilers alert for that show, you've seen it for season one.
Yep.
It ends up being Jasper, his friend, who's like the second person interviewed. And
Can I say, because I'm going to big note myself, picked that one immediately as well. I was on a real roll.
You really were, man.
Okay. I watched...
You're the Peter Jackson of solving movie mysteries.
Boys on a roll.
Did that come out around the same time as Death on the Nile?
Probably.
Because I remember, I just impressed the shit out of my girlfriend, because I guessed the After Party one, and then we rolled into Death on the Nile, guessed that, and she was just like, whoa, what the hell?
You should be a detective.
The one in the After Party in the first season is the way that Tiffany Haddish's whole like smoking gun, where she guesses it's Jasper, is that in everyone else's version of events, he comes in from the right, and in his version of events, he comes in from the left.
Yeah,
and if you watch it, you're like, "There's a visual clue."
Yeah,
in if you just, that's just in every scene, you're like, "That's so good."
Yeah,
watching this in every version of events that the mum talks about the daughter dying and everyone talks about the daughter drowning.
Yeah,
it's the mum dragging her to shore when the policeman reveals that he was here the night she drowned.
Yeah,
he's pulling her to shore, and I was like,
good shit,
Tom. "Oh, it's not her." I'm like, "Who's the only other person?" I'm like, it's got to be the mom.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it was the mom.
Yeah. So then, for Holly picking it, she's like, one, we've sort of like either seen this in news stories or we've seen this. It is almost a bit of a trope of a mum poisoning their child through the you know, love being toxic.
Munchausen's by proxy, baby.
That's it.
Cool name for a punk band.
Right. But then again, to go back to the fact that this is an Agatha Christie story, this was written whatever year she wrote this in.
37? Oh, no, wait. Right. That was the Death on the Nile.
I reckon that would have blown people's dicks off. Of the idea of like, that would have, I only can assume, but like that a mother would do something so dark and horrible to their child. And so it's like... this.
Sorry, just the idea of these like two, like, you know, fast-talking 1940s gentlemen around. Bradley, have you read the latest saga? My dick is in the ceiling.
Holy hell, my dick up going clean off.
It was some mother. My God. Bradley, you must read it. I don't think I'll ever get my penis back out of the roof.
It's flopping around everywhere.
It's really wedged. I think it hit my upstairs neighbor in the face. Sorry.
He thought the Germans were coming.
They're back, Bradley.
So anyway, my point being that, like, I think it's that same thing for adaptations where you've got, like, this is an older story now that did so much for the horror genre, for the murder mystery genre.
Yeah.
Agatha Christie obviously is a mate, like, she is on Mount Rushmore, no question.
She's the whole mountain.
She basically, yeah, she's the mountain.
It's her at the top and then the other faces are all of her characters.
Yeah, exactly right. And so, yeah, I think for our modern audience coming in, it is maybe a bit easier to pick these ones where I think of, like, the more modern comparison of Rian Johnson with the Knives Out ones. Like, there is so many more layers going on with his ones. And he's doing that quite on purpose. That's part of his thing.
That's the challenge, though, I think.
It, like, is one. It is
at
challenge,
a certain point, how strictly do you want to adhere to the thing that was written 90 years ago?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you know, Special K, he can write it however he wants.
Yes.
So if he's choosing, I don't know if this is following that story or whatever. I mentioned
it
before, yeah, I wouldn't want to read Agatha Christie back to back because I would be sick of the tropes. And that is because in the last, you know, 80 to 90 years, everyone else has ripped off everything she's done.
She set those tropes.
Diluted it, yeah.
She
yeah.
created those fucking tropes, right?
Well, it's like when you watch any slasher now and then we watched Halloween and we're like, oh, but like-
Yes.
JC is the Agatha Christie of slashers. Right. Like, it's the same thing as, I think we got spoiled by everything that came after, but we wouldn't get everything that came after if it wasn't for Agatha Christie. Like, I think we had this reaction when we watched The Haunting. And we're like, oh yeah, it was pretty good, but you don't, we're better haunted house stories, yes, but you don't get the foundation unless Shirley Jackson writes Haunting of Hill House.
That's
and
it,
that movie gets made.
These movies are difficult too, especially if you have a bit of a detective mindset, which, Tom, I know you and I have always wanted to be detectives. Damo, you're a mystery boy. You love it as well. We're ticking over immediately while we watch it. Add on top of that too that we're writers, so your screenwriting brain is always trying to solve the mystery ahead of time. It is a sometimes annoying way to watch a movie.
Yeah.
For a general audience who don't care about that shit, they probably don't care about the tropes as much. They don't recognize them or that sort of thing. So it's true. I think it's trickier for for people who are into movies.
I also think film mystery is a lot harder than prose for if you've got a novel or whatever. And it's because of that thing we've talked about before in book club, but like for film, you've got so little time. Like as soon as anyone is out there who writes a screenplay or a script, you realize, holy fuck, I have no time in the world to tell this story. Like screen stories are inherently small stories. They feel really big because the writing's really fucking good and does a lot. And like everything that we're seeing or hearing is done for a purpose. So if it's all done for a purpose and it's in a murder story and it seems like there's no purpose to that thing, there's clearly a purpose. And so us as writers and screenwriters are going, well, there can't be no purpose because we know any screenwriter out there worth their salt is making sure every piece is doing the job it should be.
They've shredded that script down to the everything matters.
So
and that's why like a Kelly Riley thing
stands
out. Yeah. Whereas in book form, you maybe spend more time with her.
You could bury that.
Yeah,
you can have things that aren't actually, that are more, you can have way more red herrings. You can have so many more characters if you wanted to. So again, I'd love to read the book version, to be honest. I think it would be interesting to see if that gets buried a bit more.
In book form, you don't have a well-known actor who hasn't done anything yet.
There it is.
Yeah. That happens so often in mystery movies where you're like, I know Willem Dafoe. I know that he's going to come in and do something.
Yeah. Have you guys seen Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy?
I haven't. No.
Yeah. Well, it's a similar thing where you go, do you wonder who the spy is going to be? And you're looking at the cast and you're going,
yep.
I think I know who it's going to be.
Like, I don't even think. I just know it will be.
Yeah. It's like, same as police procedurals. And there's a special guest this week. Yep. Oh, geez, I wonder who the fucking murderer is.
So there's that episode of Law and Order where, like, it's a two-parter and it's like, we got Robin Williams for two episodes of Law and Order. And you're like, okay.
Okay.
Geez.
How many people did Robin Williams murder?
Do you remember that Brooklyn Nine-Nine episode where Sean Astin's the guest star?
Oh, yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
there's a mole in the office. Who is it? It's like, well, it's Sean Astin, of course. It's not going to be any of the season regulars.
Like, yeah. I will say this just though we're talking about reinventing the wheel and all this. And this is the thing. I don't think Branagh is ever going to do that for his part. Stories.
No, I don't think he's.
And that's okay.
Wants to. Yeah,
he doesn't
have
to.
Fine,
We can have that and enjoy that. And I think if you like the class, and there is still a place for it, I think. And I still think he does a good job. And there's some nice elements. And like you said, it's broad strokes of horror without being horror.
Yeah.
But while we're talking about, you know, who's the sort of the next Agatha Christie stuff. It's guys like Rian Johnson who are just doing great Knives Out stuff, but even his TV series Poker Face.
Oh, so good.
The fact that that show is so good and the way that show is so clever is that the whole premise is that his main character can tell when someone's lying to her.
Yeah.
And so what they do is, in the start of every episode, you see the murder. You see the murder happen and then she appears and you're like, so then the mystery is, all right, how is she going to find out that this person's killed this person? Like, how does she get the clues to do it? And they do that
for it shows you who it is.
Yeah. You see it straight away.
Wow, so basically it's a modern day Columbo and Columbo did the same thing. And I actually looked this up because I fell in love with Poker Face and kind of researched it a bit. Instead of calling it a whodunit, they call it a how catch 'em.
Yeah.
Right. That's cool.
Yeah.
Does it never get frustrating though?
Well, no, I was just about to say, they do three episodes. The first three episodes hit that trope and you're like, okay, this is the pattern of it. And then the fourth episode happens and they just completely just tweak it like just slightly and you're like, oh shit, okay. And then there's another episode later on where you're like, you don't know who's done it. And you're like, but you know it's one of these people.
Yeah.
And it just sort of goes on and on a bit like that and you're trying to, he tweaks it enough after the first few that you know the pattern and you know what's supposed to happen. And then it becomes about, well, Not how you're going to catch them, but then it turns into, well, what is going to happen to her when she learns who's done it? And then, all right, well, how are they going to get, like, it's just, he reinvents it.
Mm.
He lets you work out what the pattern is, and then he pivots the pattern.
Yeah.
And fuck, I hope we get a season two
of
Natasha Lyonne's female Columbo.
Oh, I think we will.
She's perfectly cast.
Really terrific show. And to be fair, him and the writing team. He has a really good writing team.
Yes, no, I will say that. It's not just all him, but the writing on that show is awesome, and I feel like there is a place for Kenneth Branagh's Poirot and there is a place for Rian Johnson's Benoit and Natasha Lyonne.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
It's great stuff. All right, boys. Where are we scared?
No.
There are two jump scares in it that got me. I'm not going to lie. And one of them is the first one where he looks up in the mirror. And it's not, again, it's not anything new. But he looks up in the mirror and there's the waterlogged girl behind him. Mm. It's a freaky shot.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Look. Yeah, that got me too.
Yeah.
I'm not counting it as being scared.
Okay.
What do you mean?
No, that's cheap shit.
hang on. It's scared, it's scared.
No, I'm not. Sean, like, you don't. No, that happened and I went, whew, Kenny boy.
If you shit your pants.
Didn't shit my pants.
No, but if you shit your pants, you don't. Oh, I don't. That doesn't count. That shit in my pants doesn't count.
I don't know. I feel differently about cheap jump scares.
Yeah, but I don't think that's a.
Sorry, but like we've watched stuff that is definitely not a scary. Like it's just not a scary movie. And yet they've had like rude, like maybe one or two just rude shit jump scares.
Sure.
And yeah, of course, because sometimes you're just staring at a screen, you go, ooh, okay. Yeah. And your head goes back a bit.
Right.
I'm not counting that as a scare.
But from that point on.
That's not a scary
though,
movie, sorry.
Mm. I had some apprehension around some of the spaces and the framing.
Yes.
Like, there were some bits in the movie where I was like.
Well, you're a goddamn coward.
Okay.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah, I guess. That's the print.
What was the second one?
You've got a stubby holder in front of you. What is the name of this show?
I can only say Scaredy, so I'm not sure what the rest of the show is called.
Well, that's pretty much it. I was scared. That scare was big enough that I was like, oh, it is a bit horror. They're going to lean into a bit of the horror
shit. What was the second one?
The second one that was creepy and spooky was, again, I was apprehensive about just the general vibe.
Yes.
Yeah. But the one just in the sort of the final confrontation scene where the lightning flashes and she's floating in the sky. I'm like, that's kind of cool.
That was good. I did like that. I got to give that one.
Were you scared, Damo?
I think I want to say yes. I think I've got to give...
You boys are wild.
Well, this is where it's like, so again, it's not doing anything...
No, but it's the premise of the show, you fucking
idiot. The way it's playing with horror, it's not doing anything new at all. And again, I don't think he's got the passion for horror at all to actually do it interestingly. But again, I've got to give credit to the way it looked. For the jump scare one, yep, I saw it coming a mile away, but it was still creepy.
Yeah, I was like, something fuck's going to be happening.
Tina Fey's hand on his shoulder was like a little bit of a jump scare. And the one that I actually think that I liked the most, and I'm like, oh, I think that could scare me if they went further down that road. The idea of him sort of like starting to lose his mind a little bit.
Sure.
The scene in the bathroom where he's trying to turn the water on. And then at some point, the water is gushing on and it's steaming hot because it's actually been on for a while. And then later he turns it off. And then he goes out, he's talking to the kid, and the kid goes, you didn't turn the water off, by the way.
Mm.
That, I'm like, if they'd maybe pulled that thread a bit more, because I actually think, like, the fear of, again, to me, it's kind of tied into a bit of, like, anyone getting, like, Alzheimer's or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Or any, like, lack of control over, like, not, obviously, in life, you lack control in more situations than you'd like anyway. But of that thing of like, I'm not even in control of my own fucking mind anymore. Like that to me is genuinely terrifying. And I think as visually, they showed that really well with that scene. I actually thought that was a really nice little scene to get into that mindset of like, yeah, you would not be feeling safe, comfortable. That is scary. Let alone that he's also now trying to like, no, I can still solve this mystery sort of thing.
Yeah. I think for a character with his mind, that would be a really interesting thing to explore further.
Yeah, yeah.
A bit of a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
Now, I feel far too safe in Poirot's beautiful arms to ever be scared by this
I movie. Will also say I never thought, even though it kind of ends on of, well, maybe, but I never actually thought it was a supernatural thing.
No, I thought
no, I knew it would not be ghosts.
Even when it looked scary, and I will say, yep, they did things to make it look scary, I was never scared of the ghost.
Although they do that thing, though, at the end where it's like, yeah, but he's like, no, I was on drugs.
Yeah,
but it's like, he kind of is like, but maybe I saw it.
Well, we even have the shot where the mum falls into the water.
And is pulled into the water by the daughter.
The daughter's down there, like, Perot's not seeing that. We're seeing that.
Yeah, that is an interesting point of view shot to have.
Yeah, that's telling the audience, hey, this is a ghost.
I think that's the message it ends with.
Yeah.
He even says sort of something to that effect that we have to live with the ghosts we have, whether they're
real or not.
Yeah. That was a nice little scene.
I think that's, and that's him then being like, I'm back.
I'm back, baby.
And then he opens that door and he goes up on that roof and he's like, I've got all your medical records right here. I love that so much.
With you telling me that in the end of two, he shaved the mustache off.
Yeah.
Here's what they should have done. He doesn't have the mustache the whole time for this movie.
And then it's back.
And right at the end, not only is it back, he literally picks it up and slaps it on his face.
Fantastic.
Looks at himself in the mirror and says, Daddy's got to get to work. Daddy's got to get to work.
I love that.
I thought the ending was really nice.
It was good.
I think I'm talking about the last like 5 minutes.
Yes.
They tied all the little bows up nicely.
Yeah, yeah.
Was I scared? Scared of the performance I witnessed from Tina Fey.
She's the wrong actor for this.
Absolutely. I couldn't stop thinking about the whole way through the movie. I'm like, the casting of this is wrong. I'm sorry. Yeah. I love her in 30 Rock and I think she's an incredible writer.
Yeah.
And she's been in quite a few things where I'm like, yeah, great. But they're mostly comedy.
Yeah.
She can act dramatically. I just think for this character, terrible choice.
I think for me, part of the issue is, and I said this to you guys while we're waiting in the cinema and realized that the people at the cinema were waiting for us to leave because we were just hanging out.
They were a little too keen.
They were too keen.
I want to watch all the fucking credits. Yes.
Yeah, respect.
I want to see the post-credits sting.
Yeah. Poirot will return.
Yeah.
I want to see Thanos snap his fingers and Poirot is holding the gauntlet. And he's like, this is very interesting.
Very interesting. anyway, but yeah, I can't help but see her as Tina Fey. As in, like, I can see that that's Tina Fey on screen and she's acting as this character.
Doesn't feel like.
Yeah.
As well as, like, I kind of want to see her. I feel like she's always cast as a Tina Fey-ish character. So, like, obviously her in 30 Rock is basically because we know her from as her personality.
Yeah.
It's really just an extension of herself. Yeah. She's sort of this sort of slightly cynical, judgy kind of person who's very funny.
That fast-talking American writer character is okay for her to do, but she doesn't quite...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I want to see her play completely against type. And I know she was in that one Sisters, which is kind of that, but that's broad comedy. I want to see her like in a serious role completely against type, to know for sure if she can act. Actually, one thing I did like her in, and I'm blanking on the title, maybe one of you boys can tell me, she's like a war correspondent.
Yeah,
Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
Yeah. She was actually pretty good in that, to give her credit. Yeah.
But is that comedic?
She still plays it.
But
she plays it. She's funny.
I thought that was a comedy film.
Nah, it's dramedy.
No, dramedy.
Still in the, yeah.
Still in that ballpark.
But it is. Yeah. She isn't playing someone cynical in that. Yeah. She's actually quite... Everyone else around her is quite cynical. And she's kind of like, no,
just for this role, I think she's actually completely wrong for it. And to the... I get distracted from scenes she was in.
Who would you cast?
I've got two options locked alone.
Go, Tom.
Gina Davis.
Okay.
Just someone really different. I'd love to see her play like a fast-talking American.
Yeah.
Or Rachel McAdam.
Yep.
Rachel McAdam could do it.
Yeah. Gina Davis could do it,
McAdam... Like, it already feels a little bit like a Sherlock Holmes character, to be honest. I can see that. I can see her playing it. I don't think I really want to watch that again. I think there's a better option out there.
Gina Davis
is a good call.
I think she's too young for the character, but I'd love to see an older version of Saoirse Ronan.
Oh.
Yeah.
That would have been an interesting thing. You'd have to completely change
the character. You can't say old friend if it's fucking Saoirse Ronan.
This is what you do. You get Saoirse Ronan and you get Dev Patel playing Brenner. I'm trying to put Dev in everything.
Yeah,
I just want to see his beautiful face.
But even just like my understanding from the books is that character is English.
Okay.
So coming into it, Tom and I were like, what's the accent going to be? And then she spoke and I was like, ah, no. She's American.
I actually think the way they've done it is the transatlantic thing. And that's why I think Gina Davis would be good because I've seen her do transatlantic
before. I rate that call. Gina Davis, I just think would be great.
And I think she could be witty and smart. And then I think she also has the dramatic chops to play the turn to be like, yeah, all right, well, fuck you. Like, you're right. You don't have friends. I don't like you. You're not a nice person.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I actually do like that, though, that Poirot doesn't have friends, but not because he doesn't want friends.
It's
because everyone's out to get him. I like having a detective. Again, it's why Blanc works so well, is that at his heart, you know, Sherlock is a dick.
Yeah.
Whereas Blanc is nice.
Yes.
Poirot is nice. He cares too much.
Yes, yeah, he loses his soul every time he solves a mystery.
Yeah.
Is that a thing in Poirot stories?
I don't know, but it happens in every movie. He tears up.
Yeah,
I think it gets to him.
Again, I think it's great. Yeah. I think I love it a little bit.
I tell you what I did love, just this is unrelated to anything, is the little beat where he's interviewing the two assistants who are the Hungarian brother siblings, interviewing both of them separate from one another.
That was great. That was very good.
But I love that it added some nice emotional weight because one of them would be like, we're going to Missouri. Why? We watched the St. Louis.
Yeah, and then that was actually really
nice. It was the only thing that could get my sister to sleep. And then you cut back to her and she has it's just...
And the resolution with them was a really nice little bit.
Yeah.
On Tina Fey, keep the character American. Maybe from Boston, Tom? Julianne Moore.
just make her play a character from... You're in 30
from
Rock.
From 30 Rock, yeah.
Julianne Moore, though, thinking
of actors from 30 Rock who could do it better than Tina Fey.
Julianne Moore is in a bad
Jenna
shout,
Maroney.
Though.
Get Jenna Maroney to play that character. Tracy Jordan.
get another Kenneth.
Yeah. Two Kens on the case? Hell yeah.
No disrespect to Tina Fey. I just think they should have got nearly anybody else.
What do we think? Because we spoke about this briefly as we're leaving the cinema. So what do we think of Branagh's direction of this movie?
There's some cool stuff going on. He's got some really cool shots. He's got some big ideas. Not all of them work, but I don't care because he's having a crack.
He takes big swings.
Yeah.
I think coming into it, I thought there's a silliness to his filmmaking. It's very funny because he's the Shakespeare guy. He's Sir Kenneth. He's the very like prim sort of guy, but at the same time,
he's a pantomime director, though. Yeah, he's a big theatrical director.
There's goofball energy to what he brings. Yeah. And so I kind of expect that. And a little bit of this is not as tight as it should be.
Yeah.
Do you know what it is? He directs the screen like it's the stage. So it's always bigger.
Yeah.
Because he is a stage guy.
Do you know what I wish though? My memory of the first one is that this stands out a bit more. I wanted his character to be bigger. I don't think he was actually big enough in this.
Is that just because he's a bit depressed?
There's 10 years between adventures, I guess, and his life sort of worn him down a little bit. But I just like that he's the big, boisterous personality.
Yeah.
It's hard to get
that.
He
is by the end, though.
No, he is, yeah. You get little bits of it shine through, which are really nice. But it's hard to get that, I think, when your position on the character is that he doesn't want to do this anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to see a Poirot in his prime who fucking loves the job.
Yeah, he's like,
I hope the next one he does. If you're going to canonically follow him, the next one he's going to be horny for.
We even see it at the very last one where he's got that guy who comes up to the roof and Poirot's all excited, asks him to sit down, he sits across from him. As we've got that aerial shot, you see him very quickly stand up again, Poirot, because he can't help himself. He's jazzed now by the case.
Well, that's what I want. I want him to come into something and be so excited that things are off and and then he gets disappointed because he solves it too quickly, but then it spins in another way and he's here we go.
Yeah. Well, I think that's Benoit Blanc.
I think crucial, his sidekick character is pretty crucial.
Mm.
I can't remember who played it in the first one, and I think he does it again
Josh
in the
Gad,
second one.
Isn't it?
No, it wasn't Josh Gad. It was, I want to say, Tom Cole. Is that a person? You'd recognize him if you saw the movie. He had a bit more bounce off him. That's another like pre-existing old friendship sort
yeah,
of thing.
Okay, yeah.
Whoever you pair him up with has got to be a little bit better than what the juice that we got out of Tina Fey.
Sure,
I think.
Sure.
Yeah. Just didn't buy it. Part of it, too, was because I suspected her immediately and didn't trust her the whole
yeah,
time.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right. Did I act wisely or foolishly?
Poirot never acts foolish.
I mean, he's Poirot.
Yeah. He's solving the mystery even while high.
Yeah.
Because his high brain is still giving him, like, the apple clue. Where
yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
It's something to do with the apples. Yeah, Don't trust the woman with the apples.
That's great. I loved at the end where he kind of even says, my brain was ahead of me.
Yeah.
And so even, like, the visions and all this sort of stuff that he's getting, it's his brain going, like, mate, you've got the clues. Here are the answers. I think that's actually awesome.
His brain was so fucking fired up.
Yeah.
I love that.
The characters acted foolishly. By giving him an hallucinogenic, they turbocharged his detective skills.
Tina Fey's foolish to ever think she could pull this off, I think.
Yeah.
Get away with it. There's that clip where she pulls the window at the start. And I'm like, even that is incredibly bold.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, far out.
Well, I do like, because she's obviously played as arrogant, because she says, you know, I'm
the smartest person that I know.
I'm the smartest person I know, and I thought I should get the second smartest in. Which is, like, kind of a nice, like, oh, it's a funny line and blah, blah, blah. Kind of, I think, is meant to be showing their friendship. But is, like, a thing of, like, oh, you're arrogant.
Yeah.
So I agree. I think she is foolish because, is his fucking Hercule Poirot. You're not going to get one over him.
Yeah. Her teaming up with his bodyguard didn't have much of an impact, right? Like, to me, it was just they teamed up a little bit so that he could get her into the building to have the meeting.
Well, I think also he knew about the case, the unsolvable case.
Oh, right. I suppose, he had that information, didn't he?
Yes.
In terms of comic relief, he was a funny character.
Yeah, he did all
when
right.
When there were like little moments where someone was trying to escape, and he's going to be like, that's going to be really hard with a broken leg.
Oh, it was
just
so
stuff
good.
Like that.
Yeah. Hard to run with a broken leg.
Yeah.
I also loved just that sequence early on where they're all clambering for him, and he just puts his arm out, clotheslines that guy, but then also throws that guy off the bridge.
Yeah, I think it's the same guy.
Yeah. Falls into the water, and then the
smash cut was magnificent. Yes. Talk about his direction.
There it is.
That was magic. Yeah. Him and the editor there nailed it.
Yeah, yeah. Which is funny, because as we said leaving the cinema, the editing was a bit hectic at times. It was too much, sort of too many quick cuts. There was a few shots in this where I'm like, fuck me, that's a great shot. Like, there's the one of the boat going sort of into the building, under the building.
Yeah.
Even the boat's just on the water with the sort of person with the mask on. I'm like, stay on this shot just a little bit longer. Yeah. Give it the weight it deserves.
He loves to pivot away.
But boom, we're away. And I think, oh, what a waste. Like, you actually found a beautiful fucking shot, which any director or cinematographer should do. But you need it. Like, that could have been an iconic shot if you just held it for a little bit longer.
Some of the shots were really nice, but and in practical sets, like, in practical locations, looked incredible. The lighting was great. But they were shooting it handheld.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was this sort of wonkiness to it where it's like, you can, in post-production, steady that if you want to. Sure. It's a deliberate choice to do a shot.
Make it weird.
Yeah, but even
is
like...
Is it because it's horror? Is this his version of horror?
Yeah, maybe.
Like, he found footage, 1947.
Because he's always done the Dutch tilts. So, like, when the second shot of the movie was in... super tilt. Ken's come to play.
Here he is.
You know what? When the lights went down in the cinema, I cracked my popcorn open. What I was thinking in my head was, take me there, Ken. And he took me most of the way.
Yeah.
To be fair, second shot in, the Dutch tilt is enormous.
Yeah.
It's too much.
It's all so funny because off kilter.
Just immediately goes Venice. Bang!
It's so funny because that's like, you know, when you look on IMDb and you can often have like director trademark and it'll be like Quentin Tarantino feet and stuff like that. Kenneth Branagh's one is like Dutch tilts.
Yeah.
And so like everyone knows about it. He would be very aware that people know that that's his thing.
Yeah.
So he's like, let's do it, but do it harder.
Give
like
the people what they want.
It feels like there's a bunch of directors who, where they're known for things, have just leaned into them really hard. Like you mentioned Tarantino. There's so much feet in Once Upon a Time.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And he would be a very online person too, I think. He would be very aware that people are talking about him with the feet.
Yeah,
and he's just
like,
whatever, I'm going to give you more feet. Yeah, and that's Ken. He's like, I'm going to tilt that camera until your fucking brain explodes.
Until we literally turn all the way upside down
until it's straight again. Oh,
and
shit.
Then Perot's walking on the ceiling.
Yeah, that was a good shot too, because everything's upside down. Everything's crazy in this crazy house.
Yeah. That crazy point of view one too, the Perot was sort of walking through.
Yeah.
When he's going
that
down
was
the
pretty
basement.
Hectic.
That was very much like, this is a horror, guys.
So no,
like,
that felt more like a teenage party where someone took drugs.
Oh,
yeah.
Like, yeah,
that,
yeah.
That had big sweating it out, Jonah Hill strike the fairy wall from getting to the Greek energy about it. Yeah. Like,
Kenneth Branagh, get him to the Greek super fan.
Get Poirot to Greece. That's his next one.
There it is. All right, boys, how would we do in this situation?
So I look at this and I'm like, man, when none of us are Poirot, we'd really struggle. But then I realised, Damo, we got Poirot right here. He's sitting to my right, Sean James Carney.
I think I would have solved it the nearly Poirot. Straight away. But the storm's trapped us in, I guess, so we're still locked in.
Yeah, we're still locked in.
We don't trust cops, so we fucking knock him out straight away.
Yeah.
We love Jamie, so we probably keep him alive.
Oh, Jamie, I wish
his kid's a bit of a creep, though.
The kid's helpful, though.
But I think the kid's so much of a creep that if I spend enough time with him, I'll figure out that he's stolen the money so we can steal the money off him.
Yeah,
is that what we're trying to do? We're trying to get money.
We're trying to rob the kid.
Well, are we going to help the Hungarians get to America in this version? Or
yeah, I think we should do that. I kind of like that. It's a nice story, yeah.
Did you want to adopt the kid at the end?
I don't want that little shit. No, I think he's a little freak. Yeah. He's too smart.
That kid can stay with Jamie because we keep Jamie alive because we solve the murder before the mother works it out.
Right.
And
we work out that Jamie's a mess, though. He's a mess of a man.
Yeah.
So the housekeeper has a husband. We just never met him.
Correct.
Because she leaves before nightfall. Yeah, she's scared of the place. Yeah.
Maybe go off, side adventure, kill the husband, her and Jamie, and the kid can sort of just live happily ever after.
Maybe. I don't think
we should be murderers in this scenario.
Yeah, that's probably anybody. The opposite of the objective,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
I think we solve the mystery.
What if I do it without you guys figuring it out that I've done it?
Well, that's the game you play. That's the next movie. It's
Poirot commits a crime. How can he be caught?
Yeah.
So do we, is Poirot in this or we are, I am?
You're
we
Poirot.
Are,
yeah,
collectively, we're Poirot, but really you're more Poirot.
So I just send you guys off to fetch me the perfect size eggs and I'll just take care of business.
Yeah.
yeah.
I've discovered the poison because I've been like, oh, honey, I'm going to have this on my toast. And then you just find me on the kitchen being like, blah. I'm seeing also, through time and space.
As soon as they said the honey was in the linen closet, I was like, oh, that's where the drug came from. Like,
yeah.
It was obvious it was drugged. And as soon as the honey, again, something's out of place. Like, why would a writer have that line? Like, I know they're trying to be like, oh, look, she's so scatterbrained. It's like, nah.
The lines like that are fucking annoying because they're super obvious. Like, they in the second out. One, there is a moment where someone's painting on a canvas.
Right.
And they go, huh, I'm missing my paint, my red paint.
Yes.
And then later on, there is a scene where there is, like, fake blood.
Yeah, and the one for this one is when he sniffs the and says, that's not wildflower
honey.
Yeah.
Why would anyone fucking say that?
Why would
they
say that?
Like, in that moment, that's not what you're going to be saying, you know.
Maniac behavior.
Anyway. So, yeah, I think with Hercule, with modern-day Hercule.
Yeah. One thing I love about Tina Fey is that she calls him Hercules at one point.
Hercules, great. Yeah. Would you like to call you Hercules?
Hercules is
Hercules, good. Okay. Hercules. Are you good? You've had a mustache in the past.
I've had a mustache, yep. I'm willing to grow one. Good or... boy. Just slap that one on there.
Just slap it on. Put it on the little goatee. Yeah.
Can we talk about that briefly for a second? That goatee is so shit.
It's hanging by a thread, Tom.
It's a straight line, too. Yeah. For a man who loves close-ups of his own face, buddy, you got to get a better goatee.
Come on, mate.
For how committed he is to this character, I kind of wish that he would just grow it for real.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, come
right.
on, Ken. Have some craft.
Because, look, maybe you can't grow a mustache to that degree. But you
that
grow
that
a
is a pretty extreme. Like, yeah, that's a hard mustache to grow. But, you know.
I think we got it in us.
Yeah, Tyler, you could do it nearly right now. You both could.
Yeah, we could do it.
Yeah.
All right. That's the goal of this podcast, I guess.
Mustache boys. Solving mysteries, doing drugs and living in Venice. We're just going to have a beautiful time in Venice.
Yeah, we quickly knocked this one on its head.
Yeah.
I guess we're still trapped in that building overnight, but come the next day.
Come the next day, we get rescued. We take a jar of honey. We go out onto the water. We have a beautiful
Have we saved Michelle
afternoon.
Yao at this point?
Yeah, we save her too.
Okay, we get ahead that far ahead of it.
Well, you suspect it's the mum, right?
Straight away, yeah. I'm like, we don't even need Michelle. Yeah, you can call her now. Call her on the phone. Tell her you don't need to come. Turn the boat around, and then there you go.
All right, then we even get out of there before the fucking
actually,
storm
yeah,
hits.
We get out of there.
Yeah,
yeah.
We're just in our hotel room snacking.
We walk
some
in and I'm
like
you'll find some powerful hallucinogenic honey. We're going to need that for evidence later.
Storm's raging outside. Storm's raging inside in our hotel room. It's going on.
Oh, we're in that weird little garden that he's got with those little booties on, just like sensory overload.
We hit up the rave we talked about earlier.
We're listening to The Prodigy. We're listening to some Rage Against the Machine. We're in a basement rave on Halloween in Italy. We are having a ball. Our dicks are in the ceiling. Bradley cannot believe it.
Well, that is all the scary talk we have for this episode. I've been Damien.
I've been Sean.
And I've been Tom.
And if you scary listeners like our show and would like to help us out, guess what? You can. It's very easy. Just head over to patreon.com/scaryboys and become a patron for just $5 a month and you get a whole amount of crazy extra bonus content. Otherwise, you can also leave us a review wherever you listen. That helps us out a bunch. Or you can just say hi by sending us an email at 3scaredboys@gmail.com. Or you can find us on Instagram at @scaryboyspodcast or on Twitter at @scaryboys. Or individually, I'm at Midday Pajamas.
I'm at Carney from 55.
I'm at Orca Treat.
Stay scared, everyone. Holy hell, my dick up, go clean off.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.